Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
We have all been waiting for June, and if you're wondering why, well, it's because the Monetary Authority of Singapore will be announcing the names of those successful applicants for their digital bank licenses that month.
Very true. MAS says that they have received strong interest in its move to open up the banking industry to new competition, with 21 applications for up to 5 digital banking licenses. So this is a really hot ticket. Yeah. I mean, from 21 to 5, I wouldn't want to be the one making that decision.
But really, without realizing it, you get caught up in this digital bank scene that's been growing so fast over the past couple of years. And Tonik is the first licensed digital-only bank in Southeast Asia.
Indeed, they're on a mission to revolutionize the way money works in the region. Tonik providing retail financial products, including deposits, loans, current accounts, payments and cards on a highly secure digital banking platform.
I'm curious though, if I were one of those applying for those digital bank licenses, I want to know what were some of the challenges that Tonik faced when they first started out. And of course, how will MAS's digital banking licenses change that banking scene here in Singapore? In the studio with us this morning is the founder and CEO of Tonik, Greg Krasnov. Greg, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Very good to see you, Greg. Can I just check? Is it Tonik? And did we get Krasnov correct?
Tonik is great. Krasnov is great.
Fantastic.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so it's been quite a journey for Tonik then in Southeast Asia. It's the region's first digital-only bank. The Philippines is a very hot market for you. And this is a place where 70% of people are unbanked. So this feels like a region that's ripe for this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Philippines has a number of attractions that brought us to that market first. Obviously, the huge unbanked population that you mentioned that is really keen to get digital banking services. The population is very young and digitally native. The average age of the Filipino is 24. So everybody is very keen to have digital solutions. But there's also a massive, massive underserved middle class that already has banking solutions, for example, but about half of the banked population in the Philippines are saying verbatim in some McKinsey research and other surveys that the moment they have a good digital solution, they're very keen to switch because the local banking community doesn't really propose something well-differentiated and something that suits their needs. So that's a demand we're looking forward to serving.
If we were to talk specifically about the type of digital solutions, digital banking solutions, what are on offer from Tonik?
We're preparing for our launch in July, and our MVP will include things like highly secure payments and savings platform. That is actually our core proposition. We're not very keen to be a competitor in the payment space because we believe in the Philippines that's already being served quite well by a number of e-wallets.
Right.
But our key focus is actually going to be savings and loans.
I mean, when you're talking about these licenses and you're talking about the expansion of this particular aspect of the banking industry, innovation is often based on where you have problems. So what sort of problems are you trying to solve here?
That's absolutely correct. We're actually looking at ourselves as first and foremost a technology company that solves people's pain points. And the fact that these pain points have to do with financial services is kind of a secondary to the fundamental of making people's lives better. So what we think the current digital solutions in the banking, retail banking, do not provide in the Philippines are, for example, trust. Customer that wants to make a significant deposit, he's looking for a solution that will be highly, highly secure. You know, the current banking solutions are still lacking on that. So we're actually building a number of features in cooperation with world-class suppliers such as Finastra, who is our provider of core banking, and others, to bring to the market some first in-country features to make the customers feel very, very safe to keep their money in the cloud.
But what's interesting, Greg, is Tonik's R&D functions are based in Singapore and Chennai. Any thoughts on why these cities?
Yes, actually, Singapore is where we're basing our product development because we believe that some of the most exciting innovation on the technology side that happens from the architectural perspective and conceptual perspective is in Singapore in the region. And Chennai is the hotbed of innovation for digital banking in all of Asia. Most of the people that have developed digital banking solutions for the large banks all around the region, they seem to be based in Chennai. So we put our R&D center there.
It's interesting, isn't it? Whenever we talk about innovation, we talk about innovation hubs. And the core aspect of that is you get a bunch of really smart people doing different things, but collaborating to create something new. Is that how the business model has to work? Like you talked about Finastra, for example, and you describe yourself as a tech company, not a banking entity. So actually, is that actually the future of digital banking? It's a collaborative notion.
Very much so. Think about multiple layers. You can look at the collaborative structure of the business that we're building. We're very closely cooperating with an ecosystem of technology partners. We're integrating about 20 IT vendors into our solution from all around the world. On another level, we're actually looking at what we're delivering to the customer as a platform. So part of our go-to-market strategy is to work very closely with ecosystem partners on the go-to-market side, where we use other fintech's capabilities to deliver solutions, a nice range of solutions to the customer. And it also applies to how we're building our infrastructure. So we collaborate across multiple geographies.
So Greg, that sounds great and it sounds exciting. But my core question is this: how do you create profit? How do you become profitable? And what are your projections for this year?
That is a very interesting question, actually. A lot of excitement has been happening around the neobanking community globally, but I just heard a very nice quote that most of the neobanks, they quote their user numbers, but very few of them actually release their profitability numbers.
Right.
And the quote was that the user numbers for a neobank are a little bit like going onto a dating profile and seeing the height of the person, but nothing else.
Right.
So I think, you know, banking especially needs to be a profitable proposition, and profitability in banking is typically brought in by an asset play. So you need to work with significant liabilities, turn them into loans, and that's how you will actually make your money. Consumer finance offers wonderful profitabilities for that, because that's can be one of the most profitable asset classes if you do it right, with proper risk management, proper cost of servicing, and other unit costs. The neobanks that focus purely on the payments space actually are finding it very, very hard to turn a profit because it is very competed. The customer acquisition cost is high, and then the unit costs are also fairly high. So to deliver a profit, you need to have massive, massive scale, and you need to get into a market oligopoly situation, which, of course, right now we're still not. So you have typically more than five or six players competing in the space per each market. Very, very few of them are actually turning a profit. So our strategy is to focus on savings and loans, where we think profitability is much more achievable.
But that was your really elegant way of telling us that you don't have a number for us.
I don't have a number because we haven't actually launched operationally yet, but we do intend in our business plan to achieve profitability within the second year of operation.
Okay, great.
So you're looking at 2022, founded in 2018, yeah?
Well, 2020, yes, correct.
All right. In the studio with us is Greg Kresnov, founder and CEO of Tonic. If I'm one of those guys that have one of the 21 that has submitted an application to be one of the five digital bank licenses that MAS is looking to award in June, I'd want to ask you, Greg, what were some of the challenges you faced when you first set up Tonic as a digital license bank?
The key challenge for a bank, especially with our strategy of focused on assets and liabilities rather than payments, is really the license situation. So I think Singapore has done it, you know, has approached the license issue in a very premeditated way. There's been a lot of structuring, a lot of concentration on what should that license look like, what should be the requirements to the licensees, etc. That actually also imposes a large number of limitations on what people will be able to do and a large number of restrictions, including, for example, very, very significant capital requirements.
Okay.
Whereas the Filipino regulator has been, I felt, much more proactive in trying to craft together with us, based on the existing banking regulations, of how to make it the easiest possible way for a new entrant to come and penetrate the market. So it's just been a very different type of conversation with the Filipino regulator. We're extremely pleased with that conversation because we think the Filipino regulator really, really cares about financial inclusion and is probably one of the most advanced regulators in the world in this area.
Do you think consumer mindset is still a problem, or are we way past that?
Consumer mindset in the region is definitely not a problem. We have most of the consumers in largest countries like Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines that are extremely young, digitally savvy, digitally native.
Yeah.
They do not just demand, they're screaming out for a digital banking solution. And the fact that the incumbents are unable to service that need opens up a massive market opportunity.
I'm still really fascinated, though, by the difference in the way that the banking licenses are being offered in Singapore compared to the Philippines. And I just wanted to understand from what you've learned so far and your knowledge of the region, your knowledge of the sector, why do you think there's such a difference in the approach?
I think Philippines is a much more fluid environment in general, much more early stage emerging market environment. And therefore, the regulator has to be creative and has to work on multiple iterations, just like a tech company would. Tech companies iterate. You know, they learn by doing. They make mistakes and then they correct their course based on that. And I find that in an emerging market environment, that's typically a better way forward than setting up a rigid structure and then hoping that things will fall into that structure.
Looking at Singapore and you know, with these digital bank licenses up for grabs, you guys are the first licensed one in Southeast Asia. You would have been in a good position to apply for one in Singapore, but you didn't.
I think Singapore market dynamics are very, very different from those in Philippines or, you know, Indonesia or Vietnam for that matter. These three markets in particular are breaking through the 3,000-4,000 GDP per capita, where the consumer finance services tend to take off in emerging markets globally. Okay. There is a huge level of underpenetration and underservice, and the demands are not well served. Whereas in Singapore, you have a very well-penetrated banking market. So a new entrant will face much higher costs on customer acquisition and on a number of other value drivers. They will have to accept more risky customers on the loans. They will have to pay a higher interest rate on deposits. So actually profitability for, and also the interest rate on the loans is much lower than in a place like Philippines or Indonesia. So I think the entrance into the space in Singapore will probably face an uphill struggle with their profitability. And so for us, it's a very different proposition than a place like Philippines.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, the barriers to entry are completely different, aren't they? Let's talk about, I just wanted to focus on one thing. You're described, actually, and you said it yourself in this interview, you call it a neo-banking enterprise, but there's a lot of people who don't know what that actually is. What do you mean when you say neobanking?
Neobanking is a concept that has been emerging over the last few years all over the world with banks that do not have a traditional bank infrastructure of branches. So they deliver their solution in a purely digital way. Some incumbents, some big banks try to build what they call digital banks. However, from our perspective, those are not true challengers. So a neobank for me would be a company that's been set up from scratch that actually delivers their solution purely through the digital channel.
So based on that, now that it's very clear to people, one of the things that makes people so confident about, you know, the traditional banks that have gone into so-called digibanking has been that they do have that infrastructure and people can feel that their money is safe. How have you surmounted concerns about cybersecurity, especially when you have so many partners and collaborators? One would imagine that the potential for leaks, for example, is much higher.
Actually, if you put technology first, then that enables you to address the safety and trust proposition in very, very different ways than in the traditional banking world. In the traditional banking world, for example, I built and sold a bank before in Eastern Europe, private equity banking. And to build the trust, we actually had to put branches out into high street locations. And even though we're a pretty small bank, you know, my head of marketing called it the peacock effect. So we were putting really big, good-looking branches and in really high visibility locations. And that made our customers feel like we could be trusted. Whereas with technology, you can actually much more precisely address the specific pain points that customers have. You know, people are worried about their credit card number being stolen in an online shop. People are worried about somebody overseas, you know, in China or in Russia or Bulgaria or wherever, you know, getting a hold of their credit card number and just going to an ATM. And, you know, all of these things you can really address quite easily with technology and enable people to switch it on and off, for example. So these are the types of features we're working on. Also, with good usage of data, can personalize the solutions and personalize also the security solution that you deliver to the customer to address his biggest pain points.
Right. And just to expand on that, apart from the security aspects, how else do you ensure that there's more take up of this particular solution that you're providing in the Philippines?
We're working with ecosystem partners, and we'll be making more announcements on that as we get closer to our launch date. But basically what we're trying to do is leverage the existing capabilities of the fintech ecosystem in the Philippines to come to the customer quicker, easier, with pre-existing product offerings. And we believe that the Filipino market is really, really ripe for that type of a proposition.
What are your biggest predictions about digital banking, neo-banking, for the coming years?
My biggest prediction is probably that I will have more competition.
But outside of Philippines, are you looking at any other markets? You've mentioned Philippines and Indonesia several times.
Yes, we are very interested in Vietnam and Indonesia specifically. Also Myanmar is a very underpenetrated market that is leapfrogging like crazy. But for us, you guys asked a question about the profitability. You know, proving product-level profitability is absolutely challenge number one. We plan to do that in the Filipino market, and only after that we'll look at other markets.
And you talked about having more competitors. Do you see those competitors coming from outside the region?
Some of them might, but most of the competition in neobanking globally has been focused on the developed markets. So, for example, companies like Revolut or Monzo, you know, they've really addressed the pain points of people in developed markets rather than emerging markets. So we think that for them to adapt their proposition to a place like Philippines is not necessarily a very easy strategy. So we actually expect more of the competition to come from the side of technology companies around this region.
We're definitely going to pay attention to the progress of Tonic in the year 2020. We've been speaking with Greg Konasnov, founder and CEO of Tonic, in the studio with us. Greg, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, guys.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.